Let's go back to our scripture reading from James chapter 4, verses 13 through 17. I'll be reading New King James Version. I invite you to follow along. Come now, you who say, today or tomorrow we will go to such and such a city, spend a year there and buy and sell and make a profit, whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Instead, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance, and all such boasting is evil. Therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. I want you to notice where that verse is. That verse has been pulled out of context to teach a whole lot of other things, but notice the context. I'll be coming back to that as we go through the lesson. I think if we really stop and think about it, over the past 100 years or so, there have been so many astounding accomplishments in the fields of science and medicine and technology in general, really. Even today, we are being impressed more and more with what man is capable of doing. Organ transplants. I mean, who would have dreamed about some of the things they're able to do? Face transplant. I mean, it's just, it boggles the mind. And, of course, the achievements in space travel. Who would have ever dreamed that we'd be able to get a first-hand view of what the surface of Mars looked like? Not from the air, but from the ground. Very interesting. We, of course, see technology in all areas, the computers of today. I remember the first computer that I ever had any exposure to, and it was about the size of a great big room this size, and it had punch cards you had to put into it in order to program. But anyway, now I have a computer up here that's only about like this, and it does a million times more things than that ever did, and a lot faster too, I might add. But I remember my first computer, though. I was so happy to have a 5 megabyte hard drive. I thought, and I told my wife, I'll never need anything bigger. This is it, 5 megabytes, wow. Well, it wasn't very long until I needed more. And then I got a 13 megabyte. Now that's it, end of the world, we're done. Then I started running out of space on that, and I got a 20. A 20 megabyte. Wow. And then that got a little small, so I got a 30. And you can see how this went. I now have on my desk a 4 terabyte hard drive. That's just a little bit larger than what I started with. But technology moves on, and we've come a long ways. Fact is, I was reflecting as I was doing this lesson. I remember when my monitor was a black screen with green writing on it. Anybody relate to that? Okay. I couldn't wait to get a real monitor and a color monitor. My first monitor. I'll never forget it. Oh, man. Anyway, but all of these things have happened in our lifetime. That's what's so amazing about this. It's happened in our lifetime. And we continue to be impressed with things each day. But even though we can do so much in all these areas, right, there's still at least one thing that we have never been able to do. And you know what it is? In spite of the best minds and the latest technology and millions of dollars of research, no one has yet been able to figure out what will happen tomorrow. Isn't that amazing? It's just amazing. Our knowledge of tomorrow, if you really boil it right down, is absolutely zero. We have no way of knowing. We don't know, in fact, what will happen on December 28th of this year in Santa Paula, California. We don't know. And we can't know. Now, we can make predictions. We can make educated guesses. And we can project certain things that are, we expect to happen. And we can make appointments. I've got appointments, so, and we can make plans for those things. But when it comes right down to it, no one really knows what will actually take place tomorrow. This afternoon, I'd like to invite you to join me in this fourth chapter of the book of James and see what this prophet of God had to say in this very practical book concerning a Christian's attitude concerning the future. How should Christians look to the future? I chose this specifically because we're running out of year. And we're going to start a new one. That's a good time to think about the future. Good time. So let's think about this. Now, the paragraph starts in James 4:13 and goes on through the end of the chapter, as we've already noted. But the thing we want to keep in mind here is that there are certain things that he observes in here that we can make very practical applications of. Notice, first of all, he tells us and reminds us that life is extremely unpredictable. Some people were talking in our reading about opening up, or not opening, but up on an upcoming business trip. They wanted to go on a business trip. Nothing wrong with that. And they were going to leave on that trip either today or tomorrow, whatever. Had plans to go to a particular city. And once they got there, their purpose was to spend a year there and make a profit. Well, that makes sense. Some people have looked at this passage and they have assumed that what the point of this is, that James is criticizing people for making plans to go on a business trip. Now, that's how shallow some people's understanding of the scriptures might be. But is that the problem? No, not at all. In fact, there are many places in the scriptures where we are told that we are supposed to work for a living. Ephesians 4:28, 1 Thessalonians 4:11, these are only two of the passages that we might look at that tell us that we should be industrious, that we should work for a living. In fact, in the course of these two passages, not only are we told to earn money for our own families, but we are to earn enough, if we can, to share with others. In other words, we are to be willing to make more than we consume and use the surplus to help those of our brethren who are in need. And so, it's not wrong to go into business. Perhaps some would suggest it would be wrong for him to plan to make a profit. Well, no, no. In fact, Jesus, in the parable of the talents in Matthew 25:14-30, notice in the parable of the talents, who was criticized? The servant who didn't make a profit. That's who the Lord criticized. And you remember, I mentioned it this morning, but I'll mention it again just for clarification, that talents here was not abilities. Talents were measurements of wealth. And by the way, it was a considerable amount that they were entrusted with. But the idea was that they were to make a profit on this and give the master the profit whenever he returned. Now, the five-talent man was very industrious. He brought back 100% profit. Wow. And the Lord, of course, praised him. But the two-talent man also earned two more and was praised for doing so. He was pretty industrious, too. And that one-talent man, if you remember, he knew how harsh that the Lord was, the master was, and he took it out and he buried it. And when the master came back, he said, here it is, just the way you gave it to me. He said, that's not what you should have done with it. You should have put it to work. So, the making of a profit is not something that's being condemned over here in our reading from James chapter 4. Rather, James is reminding the readers that life is incredibly unpredictable. We remember the parable of the rich fool in Luke 12:20. You remember the man had a bumper crop? He had all this stuff. He says, I'm going to tear down my barns. I'm going to build bigger barns. And I store all this grain. And I'll sit back and say, so take your ease. And you know what the Lord said to him? Fool, this night your soul will be required of you, and then whose will these things be which you have provided? You know what the rich fool forgot? He forgot that life is incredibly unpredictable. Incredibly. And he was called a fool not for making plans and not for making a profit. What was he called a fool for? He was called a fool for arrogantly thinking that he was in complete control of his future. And God said, I'm going to show you. You're not in control. And this is what James is warning us about in James 4 as well. Whether we are righteous or evil, none of us here this afternoon have any guarantee concerning what will happen tomorrow. The wisest man who ever lived, besides Jesus himself, and that is the wise man in Proverbs 27, Solomon, said, do not boast about tomorrow. Do not boast about tomorrow. What do you mean? Because you don't know what a day will bring forth. That's why. Now, you know, he's a man blessed with wisdom from God. And what does he tell us? Don't boast about tomorrow. Now, again, planning for the future is not the problem here. That's not what the problem is. Especially in our society, we, of course, understand from a very early age that it's important for us to plan for the future. We can't just go through life haphazardly and say, well, let's see what tomorrow brings. Because that is a plan for disaster, is what it is. But that's not the problem. The problem is to keep in perspective that if tomorrow comes, this is what my plan is. And I'll have to change that plan if things are different tomorrow. That's the difference in this. That is the difference. People plan to go to college. They plan to get married. They plan where they're going to live. They plan when they're going to retire. That doesn't always work out real well. Jesus, of course, taught his disciples, in fact, in Luke 14, to count the cost of becoming a follower of Christ. That means planning. He compared the situation to a man building a tower. He said, now if he's going to build a tower, what does he do? He sits down to make sure he's got enough to finish it. Doesn't do any good if he's just got enough to lay a foundation and then, oops, ran out of money. I guess that's all I can do. You need to plan. You need to plan. Notice in Luke 14:27, whoever does not carry his own cross, Jesus says, and come after me, cannot be my disciple. Now that's where the lesson is here. Cannot be my disciple. If you want to build a tower, you sit down, calculate the cost. Otherwise, whenever you laid the foundation and aren't able to finish, what's going to happen? People observe what happened here and they ridicule you. They ridicule you. This man began to build and was not able to finish. What did Jesus then want? He wants us to plan for the future. But in the end, we need to always remember what we read in James chapter 4 and verse 14. If the Lord wills, we will live and do this or that. We do not know what our lives will be tomorrow. And so first of all, he reminds us of how unpredictable life is. Second, he reminds us that life is extremely short. You know, I know that if you're a young person and you hear me talking about how short life is, you're thinking, yeah, right. It's taken me forever to get to 16. It took me forever to get to 18. It took me forever to get to 21. And I went to sleep one day and I woke up and I was 69. Think about that. That's the way it is. That is the way it is. Not only have the people in verse 13 of our reading assumed that they will travel and make a profit, they also assumed that they'd be alive. Back in Psalm 90 and verse 10, some people refer to the 70 years in this psalm as being the average lifespan that's guaranteed. There's no lifespan guaranteed. There is no lifespan guaranteed. When we look at what Moses actually wrote that is recorded in Psalm 9 and 10, we see the point he's making. Moses said, as for the days of our life, they contain 70 years, or if due to strength, 80 years, yet their pride is but labor and sorrow, and soon it is gone and we fly away. 70 years is no guarantee, folks. 70 years is no guarantee. In fact, here in the United States, I was really interested to find out that the current average lifespan, and it varies between men and women, but I'm talking about on the whole, the current average lifespan is 78.8 years. A lot of that is because of advanced medicines and the way people take care of themselves now and so forth. But worldwide, the average is 71.5. And I want you to keep in mind, that includes countries where the average lifespan is closer to 90. So you see how that's weighted. Okay. Sometimes people beat the average. Sometimes they beat the average. I was reading about a very interesting story, and you, some of you may be familiar with this, but it kind of illustrates what we're talking here about the unpredictability and the extremely short nature of life. There is a lady called by the name of Jean Calment, M-E-N-T, who has the honor so far of being modern day's oldest person. Okay? She was born February 21st, 1875, and died August 4th, 1997. She lived more than 122 years. Actually, 122 years and 164 days. Nobody's beat that one. She was 14 years old when the Eiffel Tower was completed. Put this in perspective. I haven't been able to confirm this, but I did read in three different accounts of her life. She gave up smoking at the age of 117. She is most famous for having signed, now listen to this, signed a deal to sell her condo to a young French lawyer. The attorney agreed to pay a monthly fee until she died, and apparently this is common, it's kind of like reverse mortgage, okay? To pay a fee monthly until she died, at which time he could have her apartment. Just like kind of the reverse mortgage thing, right? When he signed the deal, however, he did not know she would end up being the world's oldest person. The lawyer died at age 77, having paid $200,000 American for an apartment that he never got to live in. But you know, regardless of average lifespans and world records, all of us need to understand that even the world's oldest person will tell you life is short. Life is extremely short. In verse 14 of our reading, James describes life as a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away, like a puff of smoke that appears and then it's gone. The word describes our breath on a cold day. That, in other words, whenever we breathe out and that little puff of smoke comes out, it's gone. So you can't say, okay, well, I'm going to capture that. No, it's gone, just like that. That's how it is. Now, from our own experience, we know that James speaks the truth. And all through the Bible, writers use that same imagery. David, for instance, King David, in Psalm 144. Oh, I'm sorry. I get carried away here telling stories and I forget to push the button, gang. Sorry. Okay. In Psalm 144 in verse 4, Man is like a mere breath. A man is like a mere breath. His days are like a passing shadow. That's how it is. In 2 Samuel 14 and verse 14, we find that life is compared to water that is spilled out on the ground. In Job 7 and verse 6, life is said to be faster than a weaver's shuttle. Have you ever watched a weaver? I mean, you can't move your head fast enough to keep up with it. It is just absolutely amazing. But life is faster than a weaver's shuttle. Job 9:25 says that his brief life, that is Job's brief life, had gone by faster than a runner. And in the next verse, he compares his life to a reed boat slipping by, or to an eagle swooping down on its prey. If you've ever seen that, that is absolutely breathtaking. Breathtaking. I have had the privilege more than once in my life to see an eagle swoop down on its prey. And it's just unbelievable. In Psalm 103, verses 15 and 16, David compares life to the flowers or the grass of the field. It's here today. Where is it tomorrow? It's gone. Isaiah 38 and 12, Hezekiah compares his life to a shepherd's tent. And it's what happens? It's rolled up. Put it up, roll it up. Put it up, roll it up. It's gone. We find in a reminder from James, first of all, though, that life is not only unpredictable, but even if we do live a fairly long life, when it all comes down to it, it's rather short. Rather short. But we also want to consider the main point here. Now that we have made these observations, what is James really trying to get us to understand? Well, I believe the main point here is we are to include God in our plans. That's where the problem was. As we look back at the plans discussed in verse 13, I don't think anybody would say there's anything evil in those plans. Would you? Seriously? Nothing evil in those plans. And there's nothing inherently wrong with what they set about to do. But when we come down to verse 16, what do we see? The problem is arrogance. I will do this, old reef. So who are you? You could say, I would like to do this. Or more properly, if the Lord wills, I will do this. But who are you to say, I will do this? You're not in a position to do that. These people were self-reliant and not looking for God's approval of what they were doing. They were not stealing or cheating or lying, but what did they do? They left God out of their plans entirely. That was the problem. They had simply forgotten to include God. Now, in order to fix this problem, James says we should say, if the Lord wills, we will live and also do this or do that. In other words, in our planning and our decision making, we must consider the will of God. If we live a life that is pleasing to God, it will be our heart's desire that God's will be done in all things. We remember the model prayer in Matthew 6 and 10. We referred to that this morning briefly. But what did Jesus say? When you pray to God, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. We want God's will to be done. We don't tell God what to do. We don't say, okay, God, I want this, and I want you to do it right now. Have you ever heard anyone pray that way? I have. I've heard the televangelists on TV pray just like that. But you don't do that. That's not how you pray to God. You must understand that it is His will. And you know, the Lord Jesus, whenever He prayed in the Garden of Gethsemane, prior to His crucifixion, notice what He said in verse 42 now, of chapter 26 in Matthew. My Father, if this cannot pass away unless I drink it, Your will be done. Now, I want you to think about that. Asking for God's will to be done is not some secret phrase or code for getting things done. It is a mindset. It is the process of being concerned about the will of God in our lives, in all things. Not my will, but God's will. Now, with this in mind, we go down to verse 17. And we learn that not all sin is an act that we commit. In this case, look at it now. Look. They didn't steal. They didn't rob. They didn't plot to steal. They didn't plot to rob. Everything that they planned was legitimate. But they forgot something. They left something out. And now James says, you can sin by simply not doing what is right. That's the lesson. You can sin by simply not doing what is right. And you know what's right. You know what's right. You know that you cannot forget to include God in your plans. You can't do it. But look at us. We do all tend to forget to do things that we really ought to be doing. We tend to forget. We know that someone needs a word of encouragement, but we don't do it. Why? Because we've left God out of our plans. We understand that we might be doing wrong toward someone else, but we don't apologize. We know we should, but we don't. Why? We've left God out of our plans, that's why. We know that someone needs our forgiveness, but we don't do it. Why? Because we've left God out of our plans, that's why. We know that someone needs to hear the truth, but we don't take it to them. Why? Because we left God out of our plans. That's why. James says that when we know to do the right thing and do not do it, it is a sin. If the Lord wills, therefore, is not just something to say from time to time, nor is it an afterthought. It is an attitude of being constantly in tune with the will of God in our lives. That's what it is. That's what it is. As we go through our lives, all of us make decisions and we make plans for the future. Now the question is, what standard will we use as we make those plans? How are we going to decide? Those who expect God's direction and help of necessity must walk uprightly before God. It is absurd to think that God can be our friend if we continue to make ourselves His enemy. Look at James 4 and 4. In order for God to be our friend, we must study God's Word. We must give diligence to know what God has revealed and what He expects of us. King James says, study to show yourselves approved unto God. A workman needeth not to be ashamed, rightly dividing the word of truth. Yeah. New King James says, give diligence, which means that the word implies more than just study. It's not just study. It's to study and to put forth effort, diligence, to do God's will, to know God's will. We must do that. The man who walks most safely. I know this sounds strange in the ears of men, but the man who walks most safely is the one who has the least confidence in himself. Let that roll around in your brain just a little bit. That's really what this is saying, isn't it? There's no room for arrogance. When you realize that God is the one that we must please in everything. Not ourselves, not any other man. James tells us that we need to learn to do the right thing and then follow through with it. Because if we don't, I'm going to say it again, it is a sin. And I'm glad that got on the screen so you could see it. It is a sin. As simple as that. If there's anything that could get us in trouble with regard to eternity, it would be leaving God out of our plans. We as Christians then must make concerted effort in all humility to keep the Lord first in our lives. Every decision we make, every thought that we ponder, to keep the Lord first. The key really comes back to the latter part of verse 17. For him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is sin. I'll leave the lesson with you this afternoon. And I hope that it's a lesson that has been beneficial to each and every one of us. I know it has to me, but that's just me. I hope you've gotten something from it that you can use to help your life to be better.